Chapter 7. The slide was brief, pitch black, and smooth. Basine steeled herself to a deadly calm as she rocketed downward with her knees instinctively bent, ready to roll and cushion the blow of whatever she landed on. Much to her surprise, her boots sank into near softness. Somehow, miraculously, a pile of old laundry had been left to rot where it had fallen. Sinking down, Basine slipped on her night vision goggles and took in her surroundings before proceeding. Revealed in shades of black and green, the room took shape. One wall was a bank of washing and drying units, and across from that was a long table that still held folded linens, the laundry droids a row of frozen sentinels bolted to the wall just above it. Much to Basine's satisfaction, the room was utterly empty of wax, apodactyls, and signs of destruction. It was as if everyone had left in the middle of the workday and never come back. Basine emerged from the pile of musty fabric and dusted off her pants. Espionage was often a dirty job, but this mission was unfortunately proving dirtier than most. As she walked toward the open door, she ran a hand along a line of hanging jackets. The fabric was stiff and white, the uniforms clanking as she brushed past. When she reached the last one, she recognized the truth of it. Straitjackets. No wonder Vashka Valley Retirement Facility 48 was so far away from proper civilization. No wonder their records were confidential, hidden. It was an asylum. A remote, private place for broken soldiers and war victims to live out their days safely and healthfully in peace. Well, until the giant flying insects showed up to stake their claim. Before passing through the doorway, she drew her blade. Considering how the Dax had reacted to the explosion upstairs, she was going to be as silent as possible. Even if they hadn't yet discovered a way down to the basement, she didn't want to give them a reason to explore. The next space was another hallway spreading left and right in equal darkness. Nothing moved, and the silence was so profound that she could hear her heart pounding in her ears. Recalling the layout above, she turned right, hoping the databanks would be located directly underneath the check-in desk. If she knew the usual habits of the corner-cutting outer rim contractors that did their business this far from the New Republic's prying eyes, they would have planned their construction to minimize the wiring needed to connect the systems. With her back to the wall, she glanced through the next open doorway and sighed silent relief. The data room was right where she'd hoped to find it, and all the machines appeared intact, if dusty and abandoned. Tracing the cords, she hurried to the electric box to throw the switch and power up the system. As she reached for the metal door, the hairs on her neck rose, and a blur of motion barreled into her, carrying her to the ground and knocking her goggles off. It felt like an apodactyl, hard and pointy and random in its blitz attack, but instead of buzzing, it grunted, like a humanoid. Basine's mind switched from defense to aggression, and she escaped the thrashing weight, flipping her assailant to the ground and grasping what felt remarkably like wiry human biceps.
"Who are you?" she growled, low and vicious. "Quiet, fool. You'll attract the Dax."
Considering the ragged voice, the weakness of the flailing limbs, and the acrid scent of unwashed flesh and rotten breath, Basine realized she was dealing with someone older than her grandfather would have been if she'd had one. And she didn't need to see him to guess that he was most likely insane. Whether he'd been one of the original residents, or had taken up shop once the Dax had moved in, this wasn't a place to inspire confidence and healthful sanity. All that constant buzzing got to a person.
"Stop struggling and explain yourself," she whispered, albeit more quietly.
The man went very still but remained tense.
"Can I at least sit up? Back's no good."
Basine planted one hand on his chest while she searched him, disgusted though she was.
Aside from a rough knife, she could find nothing resembling a weapon. He gave a small cry when she tossed the knife far away to clatter against the wall, and the struggle went out of him. When she released him and he still didn't sit up, she exhaled in annoyance and yanked him by his shoulders, leaning him to sit against the wall.
"Many thanks," he muttered.
With her hands free again, Basine resettled her goggles and studied her attacker. He was even more pathetic than she had imagined. A wizened, twisted man wearing rough armor fashioned of apodactyl plates and familiar white plastoid, bound together with wire and coated with golden wax. He had a pair of goggles, too, cracked in multiple places and hopelessly old-fashioned. "Retiree or facility worker?" she asked. His face twisted with annoyance.
"Retired stormtrooper. Served at the Battle of Endor."
He snorted and fussed with the armor over his shoulders.
"Don't tell me I'm so far gone you couldn't tell."
"Name?" He settled himself more carefully against the wall and studied her in return.
"Woman of few words, eh? Me too. Once you start talking to the Dax, it's all over."
"There's no one else?"
"Not down here. Most of them are upstairs."
Basine brought her blade to the old man's neck. "One more chance. What's your name?" He seemed to deflate.
TK-1403. Arik Nightdrifter. Born on..."
"I don't care. I'm looking for TK-1472, Jor Tribulus. You know him?" Night Drifter barked a laugh before catching it behind a hand and clearing his throat.
"Of course. My old captain in the service. Good man. Quieter than most."
Basine set her jaw and pressed the blade with dark intent against the old man's withered skin. "Is he here?" With a reckless slap, Night Drifter shoved her blade aside and struggled to stand. She allowed him to perform both actions and rose to her feet, hand on her blaster.
"Of course he's here. Where else is he going to go?"
Basine shoved her blaster against his belly. "Take me to him. Now." Night Drifter sighed.
"Let me get my supplies. You got to do everything I tell you to, though. The Dax get nasty if you don't know how to handle them. And they're gonna hate that shirt of yours. They only recognize their own hive's patterns. See?"
He pointed to the yellow and black patterned plates of apodactyl exoskeletons strapped to his body.
"To them, you look like the enemy."
With a quiet curse, she shrugged out of her new shirt, folded it up, and stuck it in one of her pockets, leaving her in head-to-toe black. That was the thing about gear. What would save your life on one mission might backfire on the next. "Let's go." She grabbed his shoulders and pushed him toward the door.
"Here's how it happened,"
he began. Basine nestled her blaster against his back. "Again, I don't care." After that, he finally went silent and hobbled down the empty hall, around the corner, and to the only closed door, which he slid open manually to reveal an ascetic room lit by a single wax candle. It was a sad echo of a soldier's bunk, cobbled together of bits and pieces from the asylum above. A stormtrooper helmet sat on a low stool like a shrine. "They let you keep your helmets?" she couldn't help asking. He chuckled as he rummaged through a drawer.
"No. They were kept in a locked display case. To remind us of our glory days, I guess. And help us remember what we'd once been. When the workers left, we smashed it open. Divvied up everything we could find in the building. Lockers, drawers, our own confiscated belongings. Found some good stuff, too."
He seemed stronger when he stood again, holding up a green bundle of dried herbs, a lighter, and a ragged silk fan.
"I wasn't going to go up again for another week, but we should be okay."
Basine nodded and flicked her blaster toward the door. With a heavy sigh, Night Drifter led her through the maze of corridors to a set of stairs.
When that door up there opens, you're going to be blind for at least a minute as your eyes adjust. Make sure you have your goggles off and your eyes closed. No matter how much it stings, stay in the smoke.
Or else what? His grin showed, finally, the insanity lurking within.
Or else indeed.
She stayed close as he limped up the stairs. At the top, he pulled a circular plug out of the door, and white light arrowed down the corridor.
Goggles off now,
he whispered. Basine slipped her goggles around her neck and pinched her eyes closed, her blaster muzzle pressed against Night Drifter's bent back. His lighter clicked a few times, and then the thick, muggy scent of smoke almost made her sneeze. She could picture his movements perfectly. He'd lit the bundle of herbs and was using the fan to waft the smoke through the hole and out into the corridor.
Doesn't take much, he muttered. Just a little time. Damn things are telekinetic.
The smoke was soporific, and Basine had to put a hand against the wall to stay standing. It had been a long couple of days with more than the expected amount of running, fighting, and chemically induced seizures, and something about the heavy scent of the wax and smoke was lulling. When Night Drifter said,
"That's got him. Eyes closed. Here we go,"
she startled awake and pressed the weapon more firmly into his spine. "Lead on. And don't do anything stupid." Even with her eyes squeezed shut, it was blindingly bright on the other side of the door, and red lightning imprinted on the back of her eyelids. She wrapped one hand in Night Drifter's cloak just in case he should decide to bolt despite her threat. He chuckled and pushed on through the smoke. As they turned a corner, she was finally able to squint, and what she saw was eerie. All the apodactyls had crouched or fallen, legs crumpled on the ground. Their wings were still, their mandibles softly snapping as if they were dreaming. "Are we close?" she asked.
"To what?"
"To Tribulus."
"Very."
"Why is he up here instead of in the basement?"
"Oh,"
he said absently.
"The basement is mine."
All the halls and rooms looked the same, the walls coated with golden wax and glowing with late afternoon sunlight. Night Drifter led her up a gentle, twisting ramp, past fallen hover chairs and rusting droids, her blaster never leaving his back. A bright light up ahead suggested a change in terrain, and she drew her blade and made ready for whatever strange new people she might find living in the ruins.
"Here we are,"
the old man said.
"The atrium."
He slid open an ornate glass and metal door to reveal a tall, open space filled with light. And wax. It had once been a cheerful recreation area with couches, games, and telescreens. Now, it was the heart of the hive, the ground mounded with twitching, unconscious Dax. The walls rose in intricate hexagons, the light filtering through a three-story-tall bank of clear glass windows. The insects knew well enough to leave room for sunlight, apparently. But still, she didn't see any sign of people. "Is he on the roof?" she asked with a growing sense of unease, shoving him with the blaster. "I'm done with your games." Night Drifter pointed to a closed door, the twin of the hallway they'd come from.
"He's in there with the others. The Dax can't open doors."
A beat later, he added,
"Yet."
"Open it."
"You're not going to like what's on the other side."
She sighed. "I don't like any of this." He opened the door and walked inside. When she followed, blaster and blade drawn, she came face to face with dozens of stormtroopers.